Hello, listeners, and welcome back to Hello Health Informatics, a podcast where we will explore projects by health informatics practitioners in Canada. I'm your host, Mira, and on today's episode, we will be talking to Change Management Specialist Adam Masbury from the eHealth Center of Excellence. For some background, Adam completed his bachelor's degree in health science at Western University before completing his master's in eHealth at McMaster University. He currently works as a change management specialist at the eHealth Center of Excellence, where he develops EMR tools for primary care. Today, he's going to be talking about a different experience, though, about how he transitioned into the field of digital health by working at St. Elizabeth's Health Home Care. This experience has ultimately led him to his first internship. But before I give too much away, I'd like to introduce Adam. Welcome to the podcast, Adam, and it's a pleasure to have you on.
Thank you so much for having me on. It's a pleasure to be here.
I got to admit, I very much laughed when you told me the thing that makes you interesting is that you have almost all the countries of the world memorized. I guess my first question for you is, how did you manage to do that?
Yeah, so there's a couple of different sort of moving parts there. And yeah, it's a little lame, a little nerdy, but I guess, for me, it's always tricky to answer this question. And I kind of go with what's like super interesting to me. And so that's kind of the world, like everything about it. Ever since I was really young, I was obsessed with like globes, maps, flags, atlases, everything, right? And I don't know, there's so many different parts to that. I think it's so cool that we live in a day and age where, you know, you can communicate to any part of the globe from any other part of it. And it really starts to frame a mindset where a really globalized mindset, right? Where we're all in it together. We all have our different nuances. We all have different things that make us unique and different lived experiences. And it's really cool to be able to experience that in so many different ways. And from a kind of, you know, life goal perspective, I would love to travel to every country in the world. I did the math. Yeah, I did the math one time, and if you spend a week in every country, it'll take you 4 years. So
wow.
If you got that time, Sounds hopefully like we'll get there one day, you know.
Sounds like a good retirement goal.
exactly. Perfect. And even not to dive into the whole healthcare bit right away, but even in Canada, you know, we have multiculturalism as a policy. We're always referred to as the melting pot, which, you know, I don't always agree with, because, you know, it sort of implies we're this one unique, like this one cohesive unit, which I think we are in many ways, but at the same time, it's important to remember that we all have distinct realities. So yeah, the countries is just kind of a way to remember that and be mindful of it. And yeah, it's just really interesting to me.
Nice. Mm-hmm. I like the way you put that. I think I've definitely heard the term melting pot before, but I think it's important not to like assimilate all the cultures,
because absolutely
they all have their unique differences.
Exactly.
So,
not to put you on the spot, but can I ask what's something that might make you interesting besides this awesome podcast?
Besides this podcast. I feel like I'm a little bit on the spot. I think a fun fact I like to say now, especially applying to different places, is I like to say that I'm an avid homemade ice cream maker. So
that's amazing. Is this like a quarantine skill, or has this been built?
Yeah, quarantine skill for sure. Nice. Yes, over the summer.
Awesome.
I guess it's time to learn something.
No, for sure. That's a great thing to choose.
Thank you. Yeah, it's definitely been fun, and I have fun experimenting with different flavors. But
awesome.
Thanks for asking.
Before
we get too sidetracked, I wanted to dive into your experience in terms of entering the field of digital health. So I know you didn't do your bachelor's degree in digital health, and you entered the master's program like not too familiar with digital health, I'd say, or working in it. So I guess I wanted to ask, like, what made you interested in applying to a position before your internship even started? And what was that experience like?
Yeah, for sure. That's a great question. I stumbled into the field in many ways. I'll try not to make this too long-winded, but one of the things that really propelled me into the field of digital health and looking at ways to sort of leverage technology altogether was this lecture I actually attended in my undergrad that had nothing to do with my program really. There was this scheduled event going on for like an international week, and so there was different sort of events. There was like opera in one of the libraries. Yeah, there's like so many different things. And so I'm sort of jumping around places. And one of them happened to be a lecture on globalization from a professor at the Ivy Business School. Again, I have nothing to do with the Ivy Business School. I just thought it was interesting. And so on a whim, I decided to go. And it was this professor who had worked all over the world, Australia, China, United States, top of many major companies. And he was just kind of talking about what the future looks like from an economic perspective, healthcare perspective, different sorts of things. And so one of the things he said that really stood out to me was, he's like, let's use a use case of self-driving cars, right? And so he said that self-driving cars are becoming a bit of a more prominent technology. However, there are some unforeseen circumstances that we can anticipate. So on the one hand, we might be able to anticipate that the alcohol industry sees a huge surge, in the sense that more people may now have the option to drink and drive technically, because, you know, they won't actually have to be driving. But on the other hand, 1 in 5 organ donations currently come from car accidents. So if you dramatically increase the rate of self-driving cars, you also dramatically decrease the rate of accidents, which is a great thing. But on the other hand, we may now have a shortage of organ donations. And so that got me like sitting there, I'm like starting to think, I'm like, oh, that must cause, you know, the 3D bioprinting industry in the future to be super important. And so those, again, that started getting the gears turning, and I started taking a few more tech-based courses and communications courses and things like that, and the pieces of the puzzle started to fall. And so on a whim, I found this e-health master's program, and not entirely sure what to do in my fourth year, I decided to apply. I got in, and that sort of branched me into that. And when I got there, it was really great. It was an amazing program with amazing people, but it was also very intimidating. Initially, like right away from the first day, I'm looking around, there's doctors from other countries, nurses, health IT professionals, and like my resume is looking like a candy factory, airport, medical hall. And again, those are very valuable experiences that I cherish to this day, and I think are very formative to the person that I've become. But at the same time, they weren't healthcare-based experiences. And I know I would eventually have to be competing with these people for an internship position. And so I wanted to diversify myself a little bit. And again, while I really value all of those people and what they were able to teach me and give me those, you know, perspectives, one of my friends was working at a home care agency called St. Elizabeth, as you mentioned, in London, and they had an office in Hamilton. So I decided to apply, went through the interview process, and it ended up working out. And so during my first year in the master's program, I decided to get that job there.
Nice. I wanted to ask you, for those who don't know, what is St. Elizabeth's Home Care? Because I want to say that the Ontario healthcare landscape is always like rapidly changing. We had LHINs, sure. And absolutely. I don't think those even really exist anymore, or they're transitioning out of those to Ontario healthcare teams. So exactly. For those of people who don't know, I guess, how does it work, or what's it look like?
Yeah, absolutely. No, you're definitely not wrong in the fact that it's the Ontario healthcare landscape is very complicated and it's always changing. And from my understanding, the LHINs are still around, but they're being phased out. And even then, sort of the new infrastructure is basically going to utilize them. They'll just look like and be called something a little bit differently. With St. Elizabeth, like we mentioned, it's this home care agency, so provides different healthcare services in an individual's home, from nursing services to personal support working services as well. Mm-hmm. And the way that the LHINs are structured into it, so the LHINs, or the local health integrated networks, are basically regional bodies. There was 14 of them, there still is, but they're spread across the province, and they're responsible for allocating healthcare funds as well as organizing healthcare services for a particular area. And so home care falls under that umbrella. And I like to use the use case of, you know, wound care, for example. So say an individual has some type of wound and they go to the hospital to be seen, they get it, you know, stitched up, bandaged up. They may have surgery, and they may require some additional nursing or support services. However, it may not be necessary that they need to stay in the hospital for any longer, because that's another bed that may be used on a more at-risk patient. And so the idea is you would discharge the patient to their home, and then the LHIN would work up a contract for home care services for a set amount of time. And that contract, so that's the piece that bridges sort of the LHINs and the home care agencies. That contract gets sent to the home care agencies, so that as someone working there, I would take on those contracts. We would determine if we had the capacity, the resources, the staff to support that particular contract. And in the case we did, we would set that person up in our database. We would arrange a schedule for them, reach out to the worker that would be going to see them, call the individual, and sort of monitor their care over the course of the length of time they needed the service. And so, again, going back to the sort of structure, like you said, from my understanding, these LHINs are being phased out, but because especially with home care, it's a very coordinated process, and you need to have a pretty decent understanding of the region you're working in. And so that's why I think the structure will still be there to some extent, but it may just be called something a little bit different.
Else?
But
okay,
yeah,
that's
exactly.
Good to know.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah.
I gotta say, like when I was learning about it, like I learned about the LHINs, and then I saw them transition. I wasn't really exactly sure, like, what was going on.
Rid of them? Are we? Or something new entirely? But because even from the eHealth Center of Excellence perspective, we still interact and work with, you know, the HNHB LHIN, the Erie St. Clair LHIN, the Southwest LHIN, and so we still work with those LHINs. But we also now fall under sort of the branch of like OH West, so Ontario Health West. And so that's kind of like the body that's kind of assuming that this new role is sort of Ontario Health. And I think right now, the best way to sort of put it is we're in a bit of a consolidation phase of trying to see how we can come together and provide some more targeted care to targeted regions.
Mm-hmm. But it sounds like both bodies then are really trying to organize care from
yes, absolutely.
A funding and resource position.
Exactly. Yep.
Yeah. And I guess you kind of touched into it when I asked you about the LHINs, but what were you responsible for doing at St. Elizabeth's Home Care? I guess walk us through what it was like first working there, what you had to do.
Definitely. Yeah, definitely overwhelming at first.
Oh, no.
But again, it's a lot of moving parts, but it became super fascinating because like I said, too, I really wanted this experience to just sort of expose me to the world of digital health from a very real world example. And you start to understand just how many people need care and just how, you know, how much resources can be strained. And so my technical position there was called the service coordinator. And we were basically responsible for a few different things. So very specifically, I would say there's three main batches to the job, which was fielding different emails from personal support workers, nurses, LHIN staff, different things of that nature, taking phone calls, which would also, again, come in from anyone. These could also come in from patients who needed emergency services or emergency care. And then there was accepting the contracts by the LHIN. And so really this sort of full suite of organizing and coordinating the services that we provided. And the sort of more interesting part is I was, again, working out of Hamilton, but because we were an after-hours office, basically every other LHIN was responsible for organizing the services, or every other agency operated in different regions for St. Elizabeth. And so there was an Ottawa-based St. Eliz Care, and we would take over for all of the other LHIN regions when they closed. And so I was working in Hamilton, responsible for the Ottawa area. It got pretty hectic at times, but again, was a really interesting introduction to the power of sort of digital health and being able to coordinate services from, you know, the other side of the province, so to say. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I guess I wanted to ask you, coordinating the different LHINs in the after hours clinics, why was it required? Like, why did you still have to be coordinating that care?
Yeah, kind of a few different things, but I would say the main thing is the care doesn't have sort of a start and stop time, and so because it was home care services, we had essentially a policy that we were operational 24/7. You know, if someone needed something in the middle of the night, And, you know, they, you know, a lot of the times these are people hooked up to different like IVs and actual intensive medical equipment. Maybe they required medications, something was going wrong. So there was tons of times where someone needed to be seen by someone. And yeah, that basically, yeah, that couldn't stop just because, you know, someone else went home from their job. And so it was kind of a relief, a relationship where, yeah, we sort of came in and monitored. Usually the flow wasn't too intense after hours, but there's definitely times where it got a little bit hectic. But that's kind of the main reason, is to provide support as around often and as exactly around the clock support. Yeah.
Okay. That makes sense. I was also wondering that, like, if you in the evening, would it be a huge backflow like the next day? But I guess providing lots of support.
Exactly. Yeah. And again, like, just a huge shout out to those nurses and all those staff that are also that take on those shifts. It's an amazing again, it was a very awe-inspiring sort of introduction into just how coordinated and complicated these services can be, because essentially these nurses will take on those sort of those shifts where they're basically working, you know, through the entire night, and it's super intense on them. But it's really cool to see that everyone kind of coming together to make this machine work. Yeah,
I know. As you were talking, I'm like, I can't even imagine how much more complex it's got.
Oh yeah. Goodness! Exactly.
It's probably a huge, much different ball game right now.
Definitely. Absolutely. Totally. Night and day. Yeah. And we were already swamped. I remember shifts where, like, the phone was, you would drop one call, you're on the next one. Drop one call, on the next one. You leave your email inbox for 5 minutes and you're going to be in there for the next 2 hours. You know, it's people. And again, it just a really stark, realization that, like, there are a lot of people that need care, and it's you know, you need people to coordinate that care as well.
Well, I'm glad we had you in that position.
I was one very little part of a very big picture, so yeah,
still makes a difference. I know you were kind of foreshadowing about the project you were working on there. I know that you got to work on a pretty cool project there that you were passionate about, so I guess a little bit more about that and how that worked.
There was a couple of different pieces of software and technology that we used in tandem with our database, and I noticed that there was a couple of different functions and functionality on some of the other pieces of software that were underutilized. Like, there was like this geo sort of locator map function where you would basically be able to input all of the I can backtrack a little bit. The way that the sort of scheduling worked is we had access to all of the patients' profiles, and the workers also, the employees and nurses and PSWs, we also had them built into our databases as they had different profiles, and we could see both parties' schedules. And so when it came to the nurses and PSWs, I could, like, pull up a nurse's profile, go into her schedule, and look at all of her all of our patients for the day. And so the idea was, on this other piece of software, is you could input all of those patients. It was linked to that database, and it would plot all of the patients' houses on the map, and then it would generate the fastest time to the fastest route, basically, to go from one patient's house to the next. And that just wasn't being used. One thing I always say is, part of that job was being like an expert at Google Maps, because half the time, like, you would get a phone call and the nurse would be like, "Hey, I'm running late to this appointment. Can you just tell me what my next one is so I can just put it in right now? I'm having trouble, like, finding it." And then you would have to, like, Google and be like, "Okay, you have to go here. This is where you're going next." And then sometimes, you know, an emergency call would come in and you would have to reroute a nurse. So you would have to look up all of the nurses that were on shift that day. And then you would have to locate which one was closest to that patient so that, you know, you call that one and don't call the one that's 2 hours away in another county. And so you can start to see how this gets a little bit complicated and how, you know, technology could definitely help. And so I started talking to my manager, and she was like, "Yeah, like, we just don't really," like, she showed me how to use all of them. She's like, just don't really mandate it for our employees because it just gets a little too overwhelming. And so I kind of started just messing around prototyping, very rough prototyping, you know, like what a more holistic program. Because I think the big problem was that it was sort of segmented. Right. So we had our database with all the information. Then you had another database. Then you had another like gateway portal that could do all of this different, you know,
like these different functionalities. Like
exactly. It's literally healthcare. It's a million different systems that are that do great things, but don't necessarily speak to each other or make it very hard to speak to each other. Right. So, I kind of started playing around with that and I was actually trying to work out an internship experience with them. And so I got to talk to a few of the higher level managers about these ideas. And unfortunately it didn't really blossom into anything super major, but again, it started getting those, it was really important to get those gears turning and to start to look at, you know, what do we have available to us? Where can we maybe make things more efficient? And who do I need to talk to start taking me a little bit seriously? So a lot of valuable lessons learned on that little side project I tried to take on.
And it sounds like an amazing project, and that you really try to like champion the e-health values in terms look at ways of like making things efficient or talk to us or just think of a better way or more efficient way of doing things. So
that's it at the end of the day. I think you perfectly summed up the idea of innovation, and I think that's what we need more of in healthcare right now. Yeah.
I definitely agree with that. I also think that COVID's been a huge push in like,
oh my goodness. Absolutely. It's interesting. Yeah. Cause I can't remember where I heard it, but someone was kind of commenting on the fact that COVID has sped up the digitization of the economy by about 5 years. And I think in many ways, it's also sped up the, digitization of healthcare.
By,
you know, 5, 10x. Mm-hmm. And even if it hasn't sped it up, it's showed people just how important, you know, digitizing and making our digital programs and technologies more efficient, because our systems are already overloaded. And like you mentioned earlier, they increased 100x during COVID. And now, you know, that reality is only going to be multiplied moving forward. So I think it was, I think a big takeaway from all of this has been just how important, you know, technology and coordinated good technology needs to be in healthcare.
Yeah. And just for sure, the push to move things a little faster. I
absolutely
understand, like, health is more conservative and for good reason that it needs to be, but sometimes
for sure
get like too delayed or it just isn't sometimes a priority.
Exactly. Sometimes things just don't get done. That's the problem. And you don't have that liberty in healthcare, because when things don't get done, not to be too morbid or not to be too dramatic, but you know, people die, and people, and if people don't die, people, you know, get sick. And if people don't get sick, you know, it trickles down so deep into the point where, you know, like we're trying to affect, you know, outward change on society as a whole and trying to make society healthier as a whole. And the only way you can really do that is if you make your processes more efficient and if you put the right people and the right pieces of technology in the right places so that the gears turn, you know, in a squeaky clean way. It is a very tricky process. It's not simple. I'm not saying that at all. For sure. But I think
complicated and complex, but I'm glad COVID has given people or given just the opportunity to push for change and
absolutely
accelerate that change. So
for sure,
it's funny you mentioned that. It reminded me of this guest speaker that spoke about his experience using like EMRs and like patient portals. And he said, he's like, I'm in the system, like I'm a physician, but I still can't access my own records or my son's records. Like, I don't know how to do that, or I can't see it and it's not available. And it's just been a really frustrating process, and like,
absolutely, he's an
insider into it. So,
oh my goodness. I always use the examples. The examples are when I talk about EMRs, it's like, you can go to a hospital that's using Epic's EMR. You can go to your doctor's office who may be using TELUS's EMR. And then maybe you're on vacation in a different part of the province and you get hurt and you need to go to a walk-in clinic and they're using Oscar EMR, you know, that's three different places that all have your information now, but none of them, but all of them probably had to do a full workup. All of them had to do a history on you. All of them had to input that information manually because you can't transfer information. I was actually working on, we've been working very closely with the H&H BLIN because my organization is actually based out of the Waterloo Wellington area. And so, and one of the people that we were talking to was the digital health and IT director of the H&H BLIN. And he was saying that, like, again, that this is someone who's top of the food chain when it comes to these things. Mm-hmm. He was explaining an experience that he had, you know, where, you know, the EMR system was just so fragmented that, you know, he was troubled. Like, it's just, this is a problem that affects everyone at every level. Yeah. And you know what I mean? It's so siloed. And so, yeah, it's like in a lot of the time, it would be faster for you to physically walk to one place, ask them to get your data somehow, go through that process, then walk to the next, then relying on some sort of electronic transfer of data between those two parties. Cause that's how complicated this is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I guess all I can say is that I'm glad we're both in the field and
for sure
amazing people as well.
Definitely. Working on these hard problems.
Yeah, working on these hard problems. Cause like as much as sometimes we complain because we're like the victims of the system or we see what happens to other people, like there's so much, like you were explaining about your experience at home care. Like there's so much that goes on behind the scenes and there's so many factors that you need to consider that it's not easy to make a change or it's get a little further. So
totally. So
I guess I wanted to ask you. I think you basically covered your experience and for just learning about what you used to do and what you currently do. It's pretty cool that you're working with EMR still. I don't know if you want to go a little bit into that or it's
no, I can So it's been a really interesting experience at the eHealth Center of Excellence. We work with, we have sort of a suite of digital health services, I like to say, from virtual visits to e-prescribing to e-referral to EMR decision support tools, which has been bulk of where my work has been focused on. And effectively, we try and work with physicians on a very close basis where, you know, we really try to understand their workflows. And sort of this is another factor, one of the biggest takeaways from St. Elizabeth and the world of digital health in general is like good technology is not automatically going to fix bad processes or even, you know, simply existing ones, right? We have this sort of idea a lot of the times, there's sort of this mystification where, you know, you're going to put this brand new, you know, flashy piece of software into a clinic and it's going to automate this and it's going to automate that. And, you know, everything's going to be working smoothly. They're going to see more patients. Patients are going to be in and out. It's all, you know, good and well, but that's never how it actually happens. And, you know, there's always going to be someone who doesn't fully understand the software. There's always going to be someone who doesn't believe in it. There's always someone who's just going to like the way they do things now, right? And then there's going to be people that it just doesn't really work for because you haven't implemented it in a way that would be useful to them. And so that's a really important lesson I think we all need to take forward in digital health. And I'm working on it myself, you know, in terms of being more mindful and really baking that into my mentality is, you know, in order to really exact meaningful change, you have to understand the problem, right? And you have to understand what the problems are that the individual is facing so that you can actually remedy a solution that that solves that problem. And so, it's a really interesting process of working with clinicians, trying to figure out their workflows, trying to understand, you know, what are the commonalities? What are the things that they frequently experience that slow their day down, that make their job harder? And how can we maybe implement a piece of technology that makes it a little bit easier? And so, you know, one example that we have, one of our tools that we recently released, is kind of framing the direction that we're moving in it forward is our CDM tool, our chronic disease management tool. And basically it tracks all things diabetes and hypertension. And basically both of those conditions are built into the tool and you can toggle them on and off depending on, you know, like how, depending on whether a patient has one or the other, if they have both and like different settings will be configured to reflect the different like lab values or things that are necessary to document for each condition. And the sort of purpose of this tool is to really start diving into tools that are focused more around comorbidity. And the idea that, you know, patients typically will experience more than one condition at one time, that's proven by the statistics. And at the same time, even from just a tech standpoint, rather than having, you know, 100 different tools for 100 different conditions, let's try and bring them together. So not only is the workflow similar, so not only are people documenting in a similar way, which is great for data structure down the road, but it's also just great because now you don't have to go to a million different places. You can go to one centralized place. And I think, again, that kind of gets back to our efficiency conversation, where that's really what we're trying to figure out, ways to be meaningfully efficient, right? And so that's one thing I'm working on the EMR side of things. And another really interesting project that I've been getting to work on recently is our RPA division, which is our robotic process automation. And so we're actually trying to create intelligent bots that automate different processes, like going into an EMR and maybe looking, maybe someone has, you know, diabetes typed out into their patient chart, but they're not coded for diabetes. So we're trying to develop these bots that are like, go through all patient records, basically, you know, in a very simple use case or a very boiled down use case, you know, look for all those patient records that that may indicate that the individual is diabetic, and then code them for diabetes, right? So it's very data, like from a data perspective. Definitely trying to clean up, because again, I'm sure you're aware of, and I'm sure you've heard of, just how complicated and how unstructured a lot of this data can be. And there's a million different ways that physicians and different healthcare professionals document in the same EMR, right? Yeah. So that's a really interesting thing, and that's a really interesting project that I'm really excited to start diving more into.
They both sound really cool, and you also sound really passionate about both. I want to point about talking about like including like the people in terms of e-health really resonated with me. I remember learning about like implementing a technology is not just about the technology aspect,
not at all,
about the people and the process. And if you don't have like a marriage of all three, then it's really difficult to move things forward. So
absolutely. I think that's a great, it's also a great sort of a way to think about the field of digital health as a whole, right? Because within digital health, within our program, you know, it's sort of split up between healthcare, business, and computer science, right? And that really is the world of e-health as well. And, you know, a lot of the times it's very hard to find you know, a healthcare professional or a health science professional who's also a business professional, who's also a computer scientist. And a lot of the times you're left working with, you know, computer scientists, people who are healthcare professionals, and people who are business professionals. And you need a marriage of those three as well in order to actually, and so all of those three individuals work in very different fields, and they all think very differently, and they're all going to approach problem solving differently. And one of the things that I love, I swear by it, is this idea that multiple perspectives are the catalyst for innovation. And so that's why I'm obsessed with this sort of this idea of digital health, because it's literally like taking, you know, the forefront of so many different industries and trying to bring them together so you can accomplish a really interesting goal. Mm-hmm. But it definitely, I would say in many cases, the people and the process has to come way before the technology. Technology is great. Technology is amazing. But if you don't have the other pieces of the puzzle in place, it's all going to come crumbling down. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I definitely think it's also important to have that digital health professional, because it helps to have a common language between all three people.
Absolutely. I know that absolutely. It can
definitely be frustrating sometimes to talk to that are really different from you, or that you're trying to like work with, and they're just not getting it, or you come from two different backgrounds. So
it's actually really interesting too. I was talking to a few of my friends the other day, and one of them is currently doing his MBA at McMaster, also came from the health science program at Western. So looking at business from a more healthcare pharmaceutical industry perspective. And then I have another friend who's also currently in medical school. And so the three of us were talking, and we were kind of like, you know, we were just updating each other about our lives and whatnot. We're talking about our work. And we realized that when we talked about our work, we all talked in like almost a coded language. Like, you know, you and I can sit here and list off acronyms like EMR and PHI and EHR and, you know, and this and that. And, OHTs and FHTs and this and that. And then, you know what I mean? And then my friend will rattle off his medical, you know, his medical jargon, and we'll start talking about the business world. And yeah, it's almost like we all really do speak our own languages.
Language.
And so it becomes difficult to find that common one that sort of threads us together. But I think that's the challenge, right? It's finding a way to all speak together in a way that pushes things forward.
Well, I'm glad that you're aware of that and
for trying sure.
But I definitely think there is a bit of pressure in digital health to be that person.
Totally. So
it's good to just keep your mind open and be learning from other people. I think in any profession, the most important thing is to constantly be learning and be open-minded.
For sure. I think that's a lifelong passion of mine. You know what I mean? Like, as long as I have the ability to learn, I want to learn. If you have another really, you know, not to get too cliche, but another really great quote is this sort of quote that, you know, every single human being you ever meet will know something that you don't. Right. Mm-hmm. And so that's very powerful. Right. And so it's like, why not try and take the time to understand, you know, what do you know that I don't? What do I know that you don't? What do we both, what can we do together? You know, how can we blend our ideas together in a way that, you know, takes the best of my perspective and takes the best of yours and sort of establishes this great new precedent moving forward. Right. That's what I think really, you know, excites me and sort of keeps me optimistic and hopeful, you know.
Nice. Now yeah. That we're on the topic about, I guess, lifelong learning
for sure.
Into the future, because I want to ask, what's your goals for the future? What do you plan on doing?
Yeah, that's.
I know it's a bit really of a loaded question. I didn't mean to make it sound like
No,
I think it's interesting to see like what people's goals are or like where they want to go and what really motivates them.
For sure. I think I have some really big picture goals. Another course I took, I think that was probably my favorite course in school, like ever. And my favorite, taught by one of my favorite professors ever. I forget the exact name of it, but it was something like design innovation for health system challenges or something like that. And it was basically, you know, the first, what really captured me and sort of drew me in was the first lecture. The professor said something like, you know, a lot of the times we're focused on micro scale problems in healthcare because things are so complicated, they boil down to very, you know, tedious and nuanced scales, right? Like even with the home care example, like it's literally, you know, there was a group of people sitting in a building that were talking to different people in a different part of the province so that other people in that part of the province could have you know what I mean? So it's like, it becomes hard to abstract out to like higher levels when so much relies on thinking at that local scale, right? And so he basically said, like, in this class, we're going to look at the big picture problems and try and figure out a way that maybe that we can start tackling them. And so that's, I think, one of the things that I'm very interested in is how do we tackle the more macro level problems that are sort of bogging the system down, you know, from interoperability to data cleanliness to, you know, different sorts of things that, you know, what can we automate? What can we do to actually put information in the hands of people, you know? And so that's something I'm very interested in currently, is thinking about these big picture problems and also embedding a more, I'm a firm believer in sort of the design thinking methodology where you put the problem at the heart of the entire process and the user. It's all about the problem. It's all about the user. You are doing everything in your power to understand people and understand what their needs are so that you can build for those people. And it's an iterative process, right? You're going to go through your ideation. You're going to go through your prototyping. You're going to go through testing. And you're going to go through it over and over and over again until you get it right. And so I would really love to sort of branch off into the design side of things a little bit more, because I'm very interested in systems level design. And so that's definitely one thing that I would love to try and find a place in, like from a bigger picture level, and then from a bit of a smaller scale, yeah, I'd love to continue to work on these sorts of projects, RPA, EMR work, and you know, and then one day hopefully, you know, travel the world and
travel the world
things it has to offer.
You're talking about
For sure. And, you know, and it's like, I think we all have so many different passions and so many different, you know, things we want to pursue. I have tons of friends who make music, art. I love fashion personally. There's just, I love soccer. I just want to find a way to sort of, you know, allow everyone to realize, you know, their sort of full potential. And I think that really starts with our health, right? You know, if you have a healthier society, you have a group of people that can figure things out for themselves and that can take power. Because that's the one thing as well I really like about the idea of thinking about, you know, public health and social and personal determinants and things like that is oftentimes we really neglect the most vulnerable people in our society, right? There's tons of information out there about how, you know, our health, the most important things that contribute to our health are things like our socioeconomic status and our education, which is insane. So those are things I'm passionate about as well, right? Literacy levels. How do we actually bake a culture of, you know, preventing problems from arising before waiting for them to arise so that we can solve them, right? How do we offload those types of burdens? And I do think technology is going to be a huge, huge, huge tool in terms of realizing that goal. And so I'm glad to be sort of working on that side of things. And that's kind of where my mindset's at right now. I'd love to one day tackle some of those big picture problems. Because, and again, this is getting a little long winded, so I do apologize. But I feel like there's a bit of a culture right now in healthcare where we don't necessarily have the most robust infrastructure or foundation, so to say. Mm-hmm. We have kind of faulty foundation that's based on very outdated technology. And instead of trying to revamp that foundation, we're sort of building on top of it. And, you know, anyone that knows anything, you know, you build on faulty foundation, you know, the whole structure is going to come down in one way or another. And if it doesn't, it's going to hold, but it's going to be a very inefficient building, right? Yeah. It's going to be weak. It's going to have its weak points, it's going to have its break points. And we're seeing that, you know, we have shortage of physicians. We have long wait times. We have extremely increasing rates of mental health disorders. And it's just like, until I think we start to tackle or think about tackling some of those more foundational problems, I don't really think we're going to see the results that we want to on a more massive scale. But really interested in seeing where future takes us. It'll be interesting to see where we go after COVID. And hopefully we can make progress in terms of tackling some of those real world problems.
Yes. And I hope you get an opportunity to get involved in those too, because it sounds like you're really passionate about it. And
absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. We're working our way up there. Yeah. We're working our way up there for sure.
Nice. Nice. Before I let you go, I just wanted to say thank you so much for being a part of the podcast. It was so amazing and nice hearing about your experience and what led you into the fields and where you are now. And inspiring at the end too. I really hope you get to work on these projects, and you must keep me updated.
I definitely will. Thank you so much for having me. And I also want to say, really appreciate you, you know, taking this initiative on. I think these are the sorts of initiatives that are really going to propel our industry forward, bring it into the forefront. And this is the type of thinking we need, you know what I mean? We need to bring people from all different walks of life who are trying to work on these problems together. I definitely look forward to chatting more in the future and seeing where this podcast goes, because it's really awesome initiative. And because I've already gotten pretty cliche in this interview, I will leave you with one last thing that a professor left me with. Again, that same professor, he said, one of our final classes, he said, you guys will either be part of, you know, building the future, or you're going to get left adapting to it. So it's up to you, you know, what you choose. And I think that's a very important mantra to sort of live by. And I think we all have the possibility to build the future. And for, you know, those who can't, who may not be in as privileged of a position, you know, it's our duty to sort of try and get them to a position where they can, so that we can all, you know, move forward in the best way possible.
Thank you for the words of wisdom.
For sure, for sure.
Definitely words to resonate by. All right. And that concludes our episode for today, folks. Before I go, I'd like to say a special thank you to our listeners to tuning in to Hello Health Informatics. If you have any suggestions of who you'd like to hear next on the podcast, please send us an email in the link in the description box below. And I'll see you next episode.